I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
We have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome
to Utopia.
Hey, everybody. Welcome in. It is a mailbag edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. Good to be with you. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610. And back from the Super Bowl, back from New Orleans. Survived, got a lot of sleep over the weekend. It was a great trip. If you did not, if you weren't able to follow us on social media, if you're a fan of the station or a fan of this podcast or a fan of me personally, I can't imagine that you didn't get at least some of the shenanigans going on in New Orleans with the Sports Radio 610 crew. But it was a phenomenal trip. Probably the best group that I've ever been with to the Super Bowl, and in part because of the way that our living arrangement was structured. We had a huge Airbnb with a big common area to hang out in and cook and eat and drink and watch TV and break balls and do all those things. And then we all had suites that were detached from the big common area in this house. The suites were all attached to the house. Anyways, I guess that's a pretty common structure in New Orleans from what I understand, but this place was huge and the backyard was gigantic. We had so much fun. Big thanks to Yuengling, Flight by Yuengling, for sending us there. I've got a pretty deep relationship with those folks. I know some of them listen to this podcast. So never can pass up too many opportunities to thank you guys for sending us there. But we had a great time. Me personally, I enjoyed the hell out of the game itself. I am not one of these people who has to have, as a rule, a competitive close game for it to be enjoyable. When I dislike one of the two teams, and I dislike the Chiefs. I hate it because there are people I know and I'm close to that root for the Chiefs who I really like. But overall, I'm not a fan of that team. The fan base by and large has gotten to be pretty arrogant over this run of Super Bowls, understandably so, but it doesn't mean I have to like it. So I was enthralled. I was actually pissed when the game got closer at the end, when those garbage touchdowns got scored. I thought, you know, as a and I know we're going to do a mailbag here today, and there's a few Super Bowl questions in the mailbag, so I don't want to cannibalize the mailbag too much. But I think maybe the most excited entities out there about this Super Bowl, other than the Eagles and the Eagle fans, just looking longer than just that game, I would say both teams that were playoff teams in the AFC West last year, the Chargers and the Broncos, and their fans have to have a little extra pep in their step. That it was the Chiefs looking mortal. And I don't think we can just call this one bad day. I mean, look, the Chiefs are not going to find themselves down 40-6 this iteration of the Chiefs, probably maybe ever again. Doesn't mean they won't get blown out again at some point down the road, but especially on a stage like that, that was just jarring to see. There was never a point in this game that I felt like the Chiefs were in it. Like, even early on in the game, like the only thing that stopped the Eagles was a shitty offensive pass interference call. That was it. So, I don't know that this is just one bad day in terms of wins and losses down the road. I don't think this is a team that's all of a sudden going to be mediocre and get blown out all the time by any means. As long as they have Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, they're going to be a playoff team in the AFC. But this was a team that teetered on the brink of disaster, not disaster, but teetered on the brink of losing many more games than they probably losing many more games than they did. You know, they should have lost more games is what I'm trying to say. So for them to get their heads handed to them in the Super Bowl, I don't think this is just in terms of them coming back to the pack a little bit. I think it's real. I think they in some ways had come back to the pack already this year. It's just that they were really good down the stretch in fourth quarters of games. So the regression that we've all been waiting for all year long finally happened on the biggest possible stage. They've got a lot to fix too, the Chiefs. They've got often obviously major offensive line issues. They've got a ton of free agents they've got to take care of or to make decisions on to let go. Just to make this purely a Texans thing, I think the way that we saw the Eagles go about beating the Chiefs like a drum, I don't know if it's replicable to the extent that you're up 34-0 in the third quarter and the Chiefs haven't crossed midfield. But I think in terms of beating the Chiefs, the Texans can replicate a lot of what Philadelphia did with the pass rush, with the really good play on the back end. Defensively, I think the Texans, we saw that in these Chiefs games. The Texans did some good things defensively the two times that they played them this year. I think the key thing is now that you got to get the offense going again with the Texans or get it going, period, for the Texans. You know, Nick Caley all of a sudden becomes the Texans employee who has the most pressure on him heading into 2025. Because, again, I think they find themselves in a window where talent-wise they're right there with a lot of these teams. They've got to find a way to protect C.J. Stroud and run the football. So that's up to Nick Caley to do that. I think the bigger question in the AFC might be, are the Chiefs the team that we're chasing anymore? You know, or do you feel more like it's the Bills or the Ravens that are the team that's being chased? It sounds crazy because the Ravens made it to the same level of the playoffs the Texans did. They lost in the divisional round. But as long as Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson are there, that's still the team I feel is the most dangerous team, the scariest team out of these AFC teams. So that's a separate question. But I loved that Super Bowl. I loved every minute of it. The only minutes I didn't like were the ones where the Chiefs were scoring shitty touchdowns at the end. But I thought it was great. So I've got a couple. There are a couple mailbag questions about the Super Bowl. The other topic that I've gotten the most emails about, and instead of going through all the emails, because I got probably a half dozen emails about Stefon Diggs and what to do about that. Instead, I'll just make it a topic before we dig into the mailbag. First of all, let's take a step back and look at the Texans wide receiver situation. It's Nico Collins and then a bunch of guys who can't get open. Tank Dell, I'm not counting on for the upcoming season. Diggs is, unless they extend him, is going to be a free agent. So just taking a step back, receiver is a major, major, major need for this team. All right, so where does Diggs fit in? I thought Diggs was having a pretty good season when he got hurt. Maybe not to the extent that we had hoped. He was more of a chain mover, but he was a valuable chain mover. He was on pace for 100 catches and about 1,100 yards receiving, thereabouts. So I am in favor of bringing him back at the right price. Now, here's where we're at administratively with it. If you've missed out on that, or you know, if you don't follow Texans Cap or Houston Stressens, both very good follows, by the way, then what you need to know is that Monday, February 17th, about 6 days from now, I'm recording this on a Tuesday, the Texans need to figure something out with Diggs or else they get hit with a $16 million dead money hit for money they had shoved into future years. Of that $22 million they were paying him this year, they only absorbed about $6 million of that during the season. The other $16 million they kind of credit carded into future dummy years. As soon as Diggs leaves, that money all gets accelerated into 2025. So I think that's one thing in favor of signing Diggs. If we're looking purely just at cap allocation and asset allocation, signing him to an extension would allow you to further shove into the future your financial commitment to him. I would do a 2-year deal with him for about $12 or $13 million a year. I would do that, you know, guarantee, you know, 17 or 18 of it, whatever it is, you know, guarantee the first year salary and then, you know, do a roster bonus or something, you know, whatever it is. I don't want to get too cap nerdy here. But I would bring him back, especially when you consider what the alternatives are. If you look at that depth chart, you look at that room, people are like, should they sign a receiver in free agency or should they draft one? The answer for me is yes, both. They need to do both. I think they're drafting a receiver in the first couple days of the draft, even if they do re-sign Diggs or bring one in.
The alternative veteran wide receivers out there, they could be potential difference makers. It's Cooper Kupp. You have to trade for him, and he's got a salary and a roster bonus that add up to about $20 million. So he's expensive, and you'd have to trade some draft capital for him. Probably nothing major, but some draft capital for him. Deebo Samuel, who I don't feel like is a fit for me, hasn't been productive in a few years. His style and body type, I don't think, are what the Texans are necessarily looking for. He's been banged up. At least with Diggs, it's an ACL. You know what I mean? Like, Diggs has not had any issues with soft tissue, nagging ankles. Cooper Kupp has a nagging ankle injury that's gone on for 2 years. That should be pointed out. Deebo Samuel's had all sorts of different things. And then Davante Adams is out there as well. The odds on where Davante Adams is going to wind up popped up online this afternoon, too. And the Texans are way down the list on all these guys on the odds board. Like, best case, they're like 13th or 14th on the odds board. The easiest one, and I think potentially still, even with the ACL tear that he's coming off of, the most productive one is Stephon Diggs. You know what you're getting with him, too. Not that any of these other guys are bad seeds necessarily, but Samuel is requesting a trade off of what's historically been a pretty good team. Davante Adams just seems to follow Aaron Rodgers around wherever he goes, once up and out, once they trade Aaron Rodgers out of Green Bay. Like, Davante Adams, there's enough like other stuff going on with Deebo and Davante, which sounds crazy considering I'm talking about Stephon Diggs in the same conversation. But I think Diggs was a good Texan. I think he was a good teammate. I don't know what's going on with his Cardi B drama. I guess he was spotted in New Orleans with Cardi B, who may or may not be in a relationship with Offset, and also has Megan Thee Stallion mad at her because she's collaborating. Cardi B is with Megan Thee Stallion's old flame. I don't know, man. Like, I got enough trouble keeping up with the NFL draft to where keeping up with the hip-hop relationship draft is a little much for me. But if you're listening, let me know. Email me if I have that right. But anyways, it's Diggs for me among all those guys. And then I would draft one. I would look if there's certain guys in this draft I really like. I really like Matthew Golden out of University of Texas. He feels like a kind of a little taller, bigger version of Tank Dell. Just a guy who gets open, makes plays. Played at the University of Houston at one point in his career as well. Got that in common with Tank Dell. Go Cougs. Or any number of Mecca Abuka, who played with C.J. Stroud at Ohio State. That would be another one that would look pretty good at pick 25. So I think that's where I'm at with Diggs in the wide receiver room. I would bring back Diggs, and I would draft a receiver in the first or second round. And then fill in around that. You know, you got to hope at some point John Metchie and Xavier Hutchinson figure out how to get open. They just don't have guys that get open right now other than Nico Collins. So big need. We know Diggs can get open. I'm not too worried about the ACL. We've seen plenty of guys come back from ACL surgeries. The videos he's dropping of him rehabbing look good, I guess. I mean, I'm not a physical therapist or an orthopedic surgeon, so I have no idea. But he looks good, you know, and again, the history of ACL injuries, not all that bad. All right. So hopefully that answers for some of you where I'm at with Stephon Diggs. I hope to see white smoke billowing out of NRG Stadium at some point in the next few days, by Monday, at least. Nick Caserio, if you're listening, by Monday. And by the way, we should be getting Nick on the show next week. Next Tuesday or Wednesday, I think. I know there's going to be a Nick Haley media availability coming up here soon. I don't think they've announced it yet, so I won't announce it on here, but I think he's going to be made available to the media pretty soon. And then I wanted to talk to Nick after we met with Nick Haley and after the Stephon Diggs decision needed to be made one way or the other. I think we'll get better answers from him after all these things than leading into all of them. We brought him on this week. He's not going to show his cards as to what he's doing with Diggs, other than to maybe say, you know, at the right price, we'd love to have him back. it'd be better to ask Nick, why did you decide to do XYZ? Why did you decide to give, why is this a good deal for Diggs? Or why did you decide to let him walk? You know, that gets really interesting. The more interesting thing to me, I think the better thing for the Texans is bringing him back. The more interesting thing would be Diggs leaving, because that might give us a tell as to how they plan to run the offense. You know, maybe there's some changes in how they're going to do certain things. Who knows? All right, let's get into the mailbag. And this will be a fairly quick mailbag today, but got a handful of good questions from a few regulars in here and a few new faces. John Thompson says, you were pretty harsh on your critique of Sam Darnold, John, but he had a great season with the Vikings. Do you feel vindicated in your assessment of him as a QB when he faltered in the playoffs? I don't know if I feel vindicated. I never, even though I may sound like it sometimes, I'm never really somebody who's worried about being wrong about something. And if I'm wrong about Sam Darnold, then so be it. He seems like a good guy. If he turns out to be a good quarterback, been great. I stand by some of how I feel about Sam Darnold. I don't think you can just ignore, and I don't think you're doing this, John, that you're pointing it out inherently means you're not ignoring it. But I don't think you can ignore just how small he came up in that last regular season game of the year against the Lions, where the number one seed was on the line. And they weren't even competitive in that game. He wasn't competitive in that game. He had several opportunities in goal to go and red zone situations where they kept going for it on fourth down. And there was never any plays run where he felt at all confident Sam Darnold was going to execute. And then obviously they got beat up in the playoffs as well by the Rams. So I think it was the Rams they played, right? That was the four versus five game. It was the Rams, yeah. Because it was the Bucs. Played, yeah, I think it's the Rams. Do I feel vindicated? Not fully. I think he's going to get paid. My take on Sam Darnold coming into the season was he's just not good. And I was proven wrong on that. Like, he was not a bad quarterback this year. At various times throughout his career, he has been dog shit. He's been terrible. Really, for most of his career. And some of that may, as it turns out, have to do with him being in a horrible organization like the New York Jets. So I don't feel vindicated really at all about my feelings on Sam Darnold. I think in the end, everybody who was propping him up as an MVP candidate throughout the year were wrong. And I think in the end, my impression of him coming into the season was wrong. You know, what he was somewhere in between that. And that's going to be good enough to get him probably $20 or $30 million a year for a couple of years from some team, which if you had told me when he was getting traded to Carolina for a second round pick or whatever, when Carolina was discarding him after that, and he's going to the Niners as a backup, and Sam Darnold would be making $30, $35 million someday. He hasn't made it yet, but I think it's in play that he will. Plenty of teams need veteran quarterbacks. I think he'd be very much be in line for like a Baker Mayfield, Geno Smith type of contract, and I never would have predicted that a couple of years ago. I just didn't think he was very good. So, yeah, it's a good question, though. I like that. I like it, some of the outside of the Texans questions like that, especially when they're about my opinion, because I'm narcissistic that way. France in the North has a few questions here. At what point during the Super Bowl did you see that the Chiefs just looked outmatched and outclassed? Pretty early. If we're being honest, pretty early. There was never a point where the Chiefs were stopping the Eagles offensively. Again, the first possession of the game for the Eagles should have kept going after that catch by A.J. Brown on 4th and 2. I still never know why teams chunk it deep like that on 4th and 2. But that should have been a catch. I know A.J. Brown caught some of the face mask kind of reaching up for the ball. I thought it was a ticky-tack call. But either way, I don't look at that as Kansas City stopping the Eagles on that drive, and then the Eagles get the ball and score a touchdown. Eagles get the ball and score a field goal. Then they get the pick six. So I never, you know, outmatched and outclassed probably, though. I guess that's a different question of nervousness, because I was rooting hard against the Chiefs, and when I'm doing that, inherently I'm nervous because the Chiefs always seem to come up big in big games. At the point where I felt like this game was over was the 3 and out to start the second half. That's where I felt the game was over. Look, we've seen the Chiefs come back from down 24-0 before in the playoffs, intimately here in Houston. We've seen teams blow big leads before in the Super Bowl. So even at 24-0, knowing they were getting the ball coming out of the half, knowing that the defense for the Chiefs, even though they were trailing 24-0, was actually, I thought, playing pretty well in that game. Look, they got handed a touchdown, the Eagles did, on the on the Zach Vaughn interception to close out the half. The pick six is not on the the Chiefs defense, and they were doing a good job shutting down Saquon Barkley. I thought the Chiefs defense only gave up 10 points in my mind. You know, like I know the score's 24-0. It was a pick six, and the rest was given up by the defense. But in terms of play to play to play, I thought the Chiefs defense was doing a decent enough job to where I felt like they could straighten some things out in the second half. And I thought, like, if the Chiefs could go down and get a touchdown with that first possession of the second half, that they would all of a sudden get some momentum going and that the Eagles might start to let some doubt creep in. When the Chiefs went three and out to start the second half, that's, to me, when the game was over. It was, okay, this is just not the version of the Chiefs that's going to win this game today. It's a good question. DeAndre Hopkins, this is still Punks in the Knoll. Did DeAndre Hopkins end up in the loser mentality category of his comments post-game and the refs calling soft calls against them? 100%. If you missed it, DeAndre Hopkins was complaining about the referees and the officiating in the post-game of a game where they were trailing 40-6 and the penalties were even for the game. I think one team had 7, one team had 8. You know, one team had 7, one team had 8, and the team that had 7 had penalties for a few more yards than the team that had 8. Like, it was about as evenly called a penalty game as you could. Even the calls that were shitty, I felt like were even. I felt like neither side benefited from the calls in the game. Maybe Hopkins is referring to things that didn't get called in the game. You know, maybe Darius Slay and Quinyon Mitchell and Cooper DeJean and all those guys, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, whatever. Maybe they were all being a little handsy, and that's what he's referring to. But it's 100% loser mentality, and I hate that because I don't think DeAndre Hopkins is a loser. But he was a loser in that moment, for sure. Best meal that I had in New Orleans. It's hard to say France in the North because I ate a po' boy every meal. Now, I had 10 different po' boys while I was there. I didn't plan it that way. But everywhere I went, I was just like, man, I just feel like having a po' boy. I'll give you my po' boy power rankings. How's that? I would say my po' boy power rankings on this trip were the alligator po' boy at Pier 424 in the French Quarter. That's the restaurant where I ran into John Gruden and introduced myself to him, and he gave me a cell phone number. So that's number one. That's number three. Alligator, like fried alligator po' boy. Number two, the alligator sausage po' boy at Parkview Po' Boy and Tavern, which was right down the street from our Airbnb, like 3 blocks from our Airbnb. If you're in New Orleans, go out of your way to find it. Amazing po' boy place. The bread is incredible. And I would say number one was the Ralph at Mother's on Poitras. It's basically a roast beef and ham po' boy. I got it with cheese, and it's got that Cajun like gravy on it. And just, again, amazing bread. The French fries were really good. That probably accentuated it. So that's my po' boy power ranking. But I ate po' boys at every meal. Man, I had a roast beef po' boy in Baton Rouge on my way home. I had a couple different shrimp po' boys along the way. A couple alligator po' boys along the way as well. So I didn't sit down and really eat any. I didn't get any red beans and rice on the trip. I didn't get any gumbo on the trip. No jambalaya. No different dishes of Cajun seafood or anything like that, man. Po' boys and fries. Maybe some potato salad instead of the fries. I would say my favorite meal the whole trip there was Lopez's barbecue meal. Lopez did a brisket the night before and brought it with him. Brisket, a couple of chickens, amazing potato salad, and some incredible beans. The best meal that I had in New Orleans was John Lopez's barbecue meal, without question. But you were asking the best. So that's the best meal I had in New Orleans, Bronson and all. Best meal I had in New Orleans was John Lopez's barbecue meal. But as far as like going out to places around there, the food's incredible. It's fucking amazing. I'd be 800 pounds. Having the whole 610 radio frat under one roof, best memory of the week. I would say my best memory, that's a good question. Best memory of the week. It sounds cheesy to say it, but just like the hanging out in the house with the guys. There were a couple nights that we didn't go into the French Quarter. We went and came home very early and just smoked cigars in the backyard, a huge backyard, and just hung out. I mean, some of you saw the video of Seth doing the shuttle drills and stuff. Just like shit like that, you know, just the shenanigans with your buddies. Like there was not one like toxic personality or anything. That group of 10, you could have plucked any 4 of us and just put us in a room and we've been laughing the whole time. It was that's probably my favorite memory Like, I guess the favorite memory of the week, like going out, I've never been to Lafitte's before in the French Quarter. It's the oldest bar in America. And Reggie Atatula, I went there with him on Monday or Tuesday night. And we just, the two of us just had a blast, man, just listening to the piano guy singing covers the whole time. I went back twice more during the week, once by myself and then one other time with Aaron Raybould. And because I just, I found that place to be so fun. That's my kind of place, like place you go. You got a band or a piano guy playing covers and you drop $5 in the jar and he'll play whatever you want. And he had stools like around the piano. So the piano itself was almost like a bar, like a counter. And you're just sitting there with strangers, just laughing and chopping up. That's the type of shit. I mean, New Orleans is pretty basic when it comes to what constitutes a good time. It's eating, it's drinking, it's dancing, it's music, it's sports. You know, there are other things there historically. I know that, you know, I know New Orleans has a deep history, the World War II Museum, other things like that. I didn't do any of that stuff this week. I ate, drank, sang, got drunk, did the show, had a blast. It was my favorite Super Bowl trip that I've been a part of. It was great. Joe Q says, really enjoyed last week's mailbag with your reporting from the Super Bowl. Sounded like a great experience for you and your colleagues. It definitely was. I'm going to welcome you back to Houston with a tiny bit of chain yanking by going back to one of my pet topics, day three draft picks. You, Joe Q. Below are the day three and undrafted players who played more than 200 snaps for the 2024 Texans. Methodology note, he says, this list is only players brought into the league by the Texans. So if they were undrafted or day three guys on other teams like Gaze or Aziz, this is just guys the Texans originally brought in, guys that the Texans saw something in and decided to either draft or bring in as unsigned free or undrafted free agents. The names are Henry Toa Toa, Kate Stover, Jared Patterson, Xavier Hutchinson, Kurt Heinisch, Jake Hansen, and Dylan Horton. Three questions. What kind of emotion does this list generate for you? Does it make you smile in a contented way, like when you read The Little Engine That Could to your kids when they were young? Or does it make you clench your jaw in bitter resignation, like the racist referee in Remember the Titans? That's pretty funny. This list, probably somewhere in between, skewing more towards smiling, especially because there's a couple Notre Dame guys on there. I'm not going to lie. Like, that matters to me. I like seeing Domers on that list, Kurt Heinisch and Jared Patterson. Look, I think if you look at this list, I think a lot of these guys, it's either incomplete or they've outplayed their draft slot. Henry Toa Toa is a starting linebacker, a productive starting linebacker on your team. And you got him in the fifth round 2 years ago. That's a good pick. Kate Stover showed me enough to where I'm excited about him with a real, A, offensive coordinator, B, an offensive coordinator who used to be a tight ends coach. That part is very underrated, I think, in this. That has me excited. Jared Patterson has been an okay starting center for you for the better part of two seasons. You drafted him in the sixth round. You know, Xavier Hutchinson has made a handful of big plays, you know, most notably the play that kind of turned that Chargers game. He was on the receiving end of that CJ scramble drill. So, I mean, it's hard to get mad at any of these guys. They're undrafted in their day three picks. So, Heinisch has hung around in the league way longer than I thought he would coming out of Notre Dame. Jake Hansen's a good special teamer for you. And Dylan Horton recovered from stage four cancer in less than a year. So now that I articulated here, Joe Q, the list makes me smile. You know, there's no Puka Nacua on this list or anything like that. The Texans are doing well enough in the other rounds, and they're doing well enough at the most important positions to where I can smile about this list. I'm a little insulted you would think that I'd be angry at this list. Joe Q, you know, I think you know that my expectations for day three guys are never super duper high. I think you know that. What is your over-under for how many of these six players will be on the 53 come September? Okay. It's seven. He wrote these six. He added Dylan Horton to it at the end. I think the over-under, Toa Toa is a lock.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code STYLE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code STYLE. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a lot. Patterson, I feel really good about, at least his depth. They seem to like Xavier Hutchinson, who I think has been better than John Metchie overall. Kurt Heinisch is inactive for a lot of the end of the year, so I'm going to say no on Heinisch. I'm going to say no on Jake Hansen. I would put the total at 4.5 and go over. I think five of the seven. I think 4 or 5, somewhere in there. Put the number 4.5. Last one, digging into Henry Toa'atoa. We know all eyes are on Stingley this offseason contract-wise, but Christian Harris is eligible for an extension. Do you have a forecast? I have no idea what to think about Christian Harris. He was gone all season. He's missed way more time than he's played, right? He played half his rookie year and wasn't very good because he missed all of training camp. He wasn't very good the first half of the season. He was with D'Amico. Then he played like a Pro Bowler for the second half of the season in the playoffs. And then he had this mysterious calf injury for pretty much all season. And even in the playoffs, when he was active, he played 7 snaps in one of the games and then just a few snaps in the other. So I have no idea what to think about Christian Harris other than to think, like, there's no way they're giving him a contract this offseason. Unless it's a cheapo deal where Christian Harris wants to lock in some guaranteed money. But even then, I don't know if I want him if that's his mentality. Like, I'd rather have somebody who feels like they're playing for their job and for their career, really. I mean, Christian Harris was injured enough last year and fell out of favor to where I feel like I put it this way, if Christian Harris were on that list we just did, let's pretend he got drafted in the 4th round instead of the 3rd round and he was on that list, he'd be one that I would say just should be on notice, you know, based on the body of his work, the body of his career. He's played like 2 good months in 3 years. So, and I know he's super talented. I get it. And I really like Christian Harris, but that facts are facts. Is he the next John Gernard that they'll shy away from committing to? and take the risk of a huge year and him walking. I 100% think that's what that is. 100% is what they're going to do with Christian Harris. I don't think there's any way they're paying him this offseason. All right, middle screen. Couple more here. Middle screen says, it's the day after the draft, and the local headline on Sports Radio 610 is, experts say Houston gets the draft's best at center. Would you prefer if that headline is about the Texans, the Rockets, or the Astros? Okay, that's a good question. I'm assuming by center you mean center fielder for the Astros. I am going to say, baseball's such a crapshoot. If they get the draft's best center fielder in baseball, who gives a shit? The most predictable, so basketball and football are more predictable. I'm going to say the Texans. I think they've already got a pretty good one in Alperen Şengün. There aren't that many great centers in basketball anymore. It's not really a big man type of game. You know, it's in so much as, you know, there's so many threes that are being chunked up there. I'm going to say Texans. Boy, if the Texans got the best center in this coming draft, then I would assume that would be probably, you know, I don't want them taking a center at 25 necessarily. But if they got the best center, then the Texans would be the one I would say. That's a fun question. I like stuff like that. I like the creativity there, middle screen. Good job. All right, last one. Justin and King Wood. That's the way he typed it. That's not the way I typed it, but I'll read it that way. So my brother and I stopped by the booth before the Dolphins game and really enjoyed meeting you and Seth, but also listening and watching the show live with Vandermeer making an appearance. Please stop right there. Justin, I remember, and thank you for coming out and visiting us in the pregame show. If any of you ever want to meet Seth and me to tell us how stupid we are, you can do it in person at the pregame show when the Texan season starts back up again in August. The preseason starts back up. So we love meeting people out there. It's a whole lot of fun. Justin continues, can we improve our O-line this year through the draft alone, or do we need to improve the line with the trade or free agency, or any chance we improve with the coaching change? Okay, I think any chance we improve our line through the draft alone, I'm going to say no. Any chance? Of course there's a chance. I wouldn't be optimistic about that, because if you say draft alone, that means all you're doing is drafting like Tyler Booker out of Alabama and saying, poof, all right, we're good, we're fixed. I think it's a bigger project than that, and I think there's way more variability with rookies, as we've learned here in Houston, than there is with bringing in a veteran. I would not trade for an offensive lineman. I just don't think you have to. I think there's enough in free agency, and I think the positions where the Texans are looking for guys in free agency are normally not ones that get franchise tag. Interior offensive lineman, you don't see that a lot, so I think if they want to go shopping for a free agent interior offensive lineman, they can. The last part is the big one. Any chance to improve with the coaching change? That may be where it has to come from. Look, they've got a lot invested in this line already. They've got some guys that are very expensive to move off of, or they've invested heavy draft capital in, and you're basically admitting defeat by moving on from them. I think they probably want the new OC, Nick Caley, and I know that the O-line coach is Cole Popovich, who's been in the building before. So maybe give them a crack at it. But boy, by the time you get a chance to give them a crack at it, free agency and the draft are already gone. I think they're going to grab at least one new offensive lineman, either in free agency or the draft. If they did two, I wouldn't have a big problem with that. The one thing they can't do is that first option you presented, Justin, which is just draft a guy and then go, here's our improvement. I think then there's a lot of pressure on Cole Popovich to get these guys coached up, to get them listening, to get the technique and the fundamentals down. Which realistic pending free agent is on your wish list this year? That's funny. I haven't really taken a deep dive yet on the free agency lists. If it's okay with you, Justin and Kingwood, I'm going to get back to that one next week. As far as like positions go, I still think they need a running back. They don't have a ton of money to spend. I should point that out. Like, that's probably why I haven't dug into the free agency list as much as I should have, because they just don't have a lot of money to spend. You know, last year it was easy to go, oh, yeah, sign Danielle Hunter, go get Christian Wilkins, you know, get this guy, get that guy. They don't have that kind of money this year. They can't really make it rain like they did last year. But Aaron Jones is a free agent, the running back. You know, he had a pretty good year for Minnesota last year. Like, him as a compliment to Joe Mixon, I think, would be great. I just don't – I don't know about Damian Pierce. You know, maybe if Nick Haley's running more power running and whatnot that Damian excels in, maybe, you know, Damian recaptures some of his form. Damian's had it in the last year of his deal here too. So I'm going to admit, I'm not going to just start throwing free agent names around because I don't look to see. Like, I know T. Higgins is out there. He's a big one. T. Higgins is a good player. I just don't think it'd be a good use of cap money to bring him in. Which Texans player is on your trade block? It's an interesting one. They don't have a ton of guys who I think you would even want to trade, let alone teams would want to trade for. I would say, you know, this is going to sound weird, but maybe if some team thinks they can get something out of Kenyon Green in the last year of his rookie deal, then, you know, if you get a six-round pick for him. But they don't really have anybody that I want to trade. You know, like, they're good players. I want to keep all those guys. You know, this is a team that can contend. If it was a team that needed draft capital, then I would have a better list for you. But I, you know, to me, it's more about, like, I think there's a better chance of them doing what they did last year, which is trade for somebody and trade somebody away. I think the only guys they would trade away would be guys they maybe see not making the team or they feel they need to change the scenery and they're getting a day three pick for them. So they're in a very different place than they were a couple of years ago. It's kind of nice. Who's going to be the 2025 X-factor player that takes the leap on our team? Okay, now that's a good question. Who's the, you know, like, in looking back to last year, like, retroactively, who did that end up being? Someone like Henry Toa, right, who was a rookie. I'm going to say Cade Stover. How's that? Cade Stover flashed some things his rookie year, got hurt at the end of the year. I think a year under his belt in the NFL might help Cade Stover more incrementally than your normal player, only because he'd only been playing tight end for 2 years his entire life before that. So I'm going to say Cade Stover would be mine. She got a former tight ends coach who's now the OC. I can see him having a lot of good packages for a guy like Cade Stover along with Dalton Schultz. Dalton Schultz is the one who I would say needs to recapture some of his form. Like, if we were doing like the equivalent of the player upgrade that we do in the pregame show, that would be Dalton Schultz for me. Latin finishes up here, Justin. I'm curious on your thoughts about this upcoming season for D'Amico. I'm a huge fan. There were a few blunders this year with game and time management. It was just due to experience. I'm going to stop right there. He was better as a rookie head coach game managing than he was in his second year. That's a little disturbing to me. Continuing Justin's thoughts, we run into a similar issue this coming year. What do you think the feeling would be around the organization? Maybe I have a little PTSD from us jumping to the next coach up. Glad to hear you enjoyed New Orleans. Keep up the great work. I think D'Amico has one of the safest jobs in the NFL. I don't know what it would take to get D'Amico on the hot seat, but I don't feel like this organization is in the same universe with that right now. He go 10-7 again and losing the first round of the playoffs. He ain't getting fired. He could miss the playoffs this year, and unless he missed it badly, like this team just cratered and went to 4-13 for some reason, like without an injury, say to C.J. Stroud or a spate of injuries, bad luck. I think D'Amico Ryans has. I haven't gone through it. That's actually not a bad topic. Like, where is D'Amico Ryans on the safe scale of coaches? That might be a good one for tomorrow. Thank you, Mailbag. Thank you, Justin. I always get at least one question to use on the show with you guys, if not more. And if I don't use your questions on the show, don't take it personally. But that one is a good one. Blindly, I would say he's absolutely in the upper quartile of safe coaches in the NFL job-wise. Maybe even in the upper quartile of the upper quartile, to quote the great Jim Irsay. But I think quartile would be top eight. Yeah, like absolutely the safest in his division. Like I could see Anthony Richardson torpedoing Shane Steichen. You know, look, Liam Cohen is a first-year head coach. But I think D'Amico might even be safer than him. Who the hell knows with the cons and with Liam Cohen and how goofy he is. Duvall. You know, Brian Callahan can't feel safe in Tennessee just based on where that organization is right now. So in the division alone, I think he's got the coldest seat. But that's a good one. I think he's very safe to answer the question. All right. I went longer than I thought I would, but I love talking to you guys. A reminder, you can email me at houmailbag@gmail.com. So we appreciate that. give me a subscribe, give me a rate, give me a review. The subscribes, the downloads help, man. They help. We want to take this thing to the next level, whatever that may be. I have no fucking clue what that means. But I don't know. I just enjoy doing this for you guys, and it seems as though some of you enjoy it as well. That's all I care about. Hang on. I was about to throw away my printed out mailbag. I need to save that one where I wrote that topic down that Justin had. All right, I'm done. I'm out of time. I got to go work out. I got to exercise. I got a lot of po' boys flowing through my veins right now. So I'll do another one of these later this week. I might get a guest this week, so keep an eye out for that. This is that time of year where I start to do more of that, more guests, maybe a draft guest or something like that. So, but I should have one more episode later this week. Appreciate all of you out there.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.